You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon of Rassilon.
That's true.
Today we're going to be talking about the third serial of the 13th season of Doctor Who, Pyramids of Mars, which consists of four episodes that aired from October 25th, 1975 to November 15th, 1975.
Joe Fax!
And I'd like to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for getting us those episodes.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. That's tumbles without an E because it's Tumblr. And today, we have a brand spanking new guest.
Ooh, fancy.
She is the mayor of Chickentown, correct?
That's right.
From the Flopcast. It's Felicity... How do you pronounce your last name? I don't want to mess it up.
Cousinitz.
I thought so. Because you said it's Cousinit from the Addams Family.
That's what I always tell people.
That's a great last name to have.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's my maiden name. I'm married, but I kept it because I thought it was pretty cool.
Tony kept hers and took mine, but solely so she could have the initials TBH.
Yeah, that and I want to collect all of the names. I just want to have all of them.
That's a good idea, too. I thought of, going the Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart way and maybe hyphenating it as Felicity Cousinitz Eldridge, but... That seemed a little unwieldy, ultimately.
It's too many syllables, probably.
Really, yeah.
I do have, like, three lines on my driver's license now. So I just keep adding lines to it.
So, tell us a little bit about yourself and the Flopcast and all that.
Well, the Flopcast is hosted by Kevin and Cornflake. Kevin is my husband. We record it here in Chickentown. I make occasional appearances, maybe once a month or so, and... I maintain the website and run the Twitter account and help with other social media as well.
I need to get me one of those.
Yeah, I mean, I run the website by virtue of knowing a little bit of basic HTML, so that became my job. And yeah, my duties as the mayor of Chickentown allow me to appear occasionally on the Flopcast, and so I contribute when I can. Mainly, con reports if I'm going to a con, and I go to at least one major Doctor Who con every year. So even though Kevin and Cornflake, neither one of them are into Doctor Who, despite my best efforts, I do try to bring some Doctor Who content to the Flopcast every once in a while.
This is a question we ask all our new guests. How much Doctor Who have you seen or consumed?
I have seen, with very few exceptions, all of it. I started watching Doctor Who around 1984, and at the time, PBS stations had all of Tom Baker and were getting to the end of Peter Davison. And I was lucky enough to have two PBS stations that I had access to, the Boston one and the New Hampshire one. And between the two of them, they eventually started showing... I think they probably showed Pertwee and then went all the way back to Hartnell and Troughton, all the while, keeping pace with the show as it aired in the UK. And maybe about a year later, they would get the Colin Baker and Sylvester McCoy stories. So I've definitely seen every classic Doctor Who story that exists in full. And I've seen, some of the loose episodes floating around, but I don't think I've seen quite all of those. But basically anything that's been put together with, animated reconstructions as a full story, I have seen. And I've seen all the new series, all the relaunch as well.
Do you expand into Big Finish or any of that?
Very little into Big Finish, but while the show was off the air, I was still a fan, and that's when I really first connected with other fans online. And I became a pretty avid reader of the New Adventures from Virgin Books and then the continuation with BBC Books of stories with the Eighth Doctor, played by Paul McGann in that one TV movie. So my loyalty in terms of a continuing story while the show was off the air kind of lies with the books. I have delved into a handful of Big Finish here and there, especially since Colin Baker got a chance to do much more with the character that he did than he did on screen. I've made a point of listening to some of his adventures and enjoyed them, and haven't really found an in with the Paul McGann stories yet, but I'm interested in some of those as well. And then the newer stuff they've done with serials they recorded with John Hurt as the War Doctor, I listened to. And so that kind of the Time War stories interest me. So I've kind of, you know, tried to stay on top of those.
Yeah. Any of the doctors that didn't get their fair share.
Basically. Yeah. I feel like, you know, I can't afford to be a completist. And in some cases it's like, you know, do we really need four more new companions squeezed into this space between two televised stories, you know? But in terms of, yeah, definitely filling in gaps, like, you know, we never really saw how Mel got introduced with the Sixth Doctor, and, you know, obviously we only have one televised story with the Eighth Doctor. So anywhere that we can kind of fit in some things. And when Big Finish has a good sale, my friends let me know, and I try to pick up a couple stories here and there.
You guys ready to talk about the episode?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about Pyramids of Mars. Episode 1, which I have titled Mars Needs Mummies.
Oh.
Or The Servant of Sutek. I didn't know which one to pick. Probably the funny one?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Go for the funny one.
That's always a good bet. So, we start off with Egypt, right? A tomb.
Yeah, some classic mummy stuff.
Because there's pyramids and stuff in this one. It's that's what the title clues you in for.
It's funny because I have done one escape room in my life. That was earlier this year. But it was kind of a, you know, Indiana Jones-inspired Egyptian tomb type thing. And these initial scenes kind of reminded me of the escape room.
Yeah, because it's one very small room that we see initially.
My escape room didn't have an evil alien god in it, though, fortunately.
Fortunately or unfortunately? Because I feel like that would be kind of fun.
It would be kind of fun. We also didn't succeed in escaping the room, so who knows what we might have found if we'd succeeded.
We've done two escape the rooms.
Yeah, we've got through one, kind of, and didn't get through the other one.
Didn't get through one, and the other one, they gave us a lot of hints.
We were like, we need hints, and they were like, here's how you solve the puzzle. Oh, okay, thanks.
Yeah, I'm interested in trying again. This was actually with at a work conference earlier this year, so we did it as a team-building exercise. Everyone I told about this ahead of time was like, okay, Felicity, you're really impatient, so try not to scream at your coworkers and get really angry with them. I think I succeeded in that.
I just flip everything upside down. That's my go-to. The one we did had a really ridiculous part of it, though, that I don't feel like it's...
Are you still mad about
the cork? I'm still mad about the bottle, because I don't feel like that's common knowledge.
There was a bit where there was a note inside of a glass bottle, and, like, you had to get it out.
You had to get the cork out. It was like a magnet, actually.
Yeah, and we all are, like, staring at this bottle like, I'm not gonna break it. Like, surely there's some solution that doesn't involve breaking this glass bottle. And the guy who was giving hints was like, okay, here's what it is.
You have to, like, put, like, a... There's, like, a napkin.
A cloth. And you have to put the cloth in the bottle.
Wrap it around there somehow.
Yeah, and if you just swish it around, it'll wrap around the cork, and then you can pull it out.
You know, that sounds vaguely familiar as, like, something I've read in a story, but not something that I've ever seen done in real life.
Apparently it works.
It works.
All right.
But that was
that's cool.
Not knowledge that I had yeah. gained at any point in my life.
It's not that
yeah,
I don't...
I certainly... wouldn't have thought of that on the spot.
Yeah, I wouldn't have thought of it, nor would I have tried it. I was so close to just breaking it. I was like, I don't know what else I'm supposed to do.
I have to imagine it's happened at least once there.
Well, sorry to take you off track. We've already, you know, strayed pretty far from the episode. Let's get back.
So we've got this tomb, and this professor, Scarman, is investigating the tomb and immediately finds the escape the room button. He moves a tapestry, and there's an eye on the wall that glows and scares off the locals, whom he calls savages. Because,
rude.
Yeah. The eye glows, and he very easily opens the door. It, like, slides open very easily. I feel like it'd been there for who knows how long. It'd probably get a little rusty or hard to open, but it slides like it's just been oiled. But he goes in and immediately gets hit with some green light, screams, and passes out. And that's sort of our teaser.
Yeah.
And then we get the TARDIS spinning through the air. I still really like that shot.
The spinning.
Yeah, I think it's just a flipped shot from the end of the last serial, but it still looks really cool. The Doctor's just standing in the console room, just looking moody.
Spacing out like he has been prone to doing lately.
He does a lot of just staring into space.
Intently.
Yeah, this is kind of the Doctor's mopey phase. You know, the Fourth Doctor becomes much kind of sillier later in his tenure, but I think he was still kind of prone to fits of moodiness.
Yeah, I actually like that in this bit because, Sarah Jane
she comes out in that dress.
And the doctor straight up calls her Vicky, too. She's like, look at my dress. And he's like, oh, hi, Vicky. And he's like, oh, wait, you're not Vicky. But yeah, it's Victoria's dress. And then, like, he's just being all mopey. And, like, Sarah Jane's just kind of, like, already tired of it.
I like how she diffuses his seriousness.
Yeah, she's like, we're not having this. We're not having grumpy times. Cheer up now.
He's like, I'm a Time Lord. And she's like, oh, we know you're a Time Lord. Jeez, get over yourself. He's basically like, I live for an eternity. And I don't want to be doing this, you know, working for UNIT stuff anymore. And then she's like, well, then just resign. What?
You don't have to give a big monologue about it. You can just do it.
And then she basically, oh, she also calls him middle-aged. I think he says he's like 735, something like that.
Something around there. It's in his mid-700s.
Right. And she's like, well, so you're just basically middle-aged. And he's like, yes, but nah, leave me alone. I'm moping. When she says you can just resign, they immediately get like, I don't know, hit by something? I'm not entirely certain what happened there.
Yeah, I think it winds up being something's drawing them off course, which they discover when they land.
Right, because, like, they get to do a little bit of Star Trek ship acting.
Acting!
Yeah. And there's a floating face that appears in the TARDIS room for a little bit, for just a couple seconds, that Sarah Jane sees, but the Doctor does not. And, of course, the Doctor does not initially believe her, because that's what he does. No one believes the companion when they see something. No one, ever, despite them always having seen something. There's never been once that a companion says they've seen something, and it turns out they didn't. Not once.
You'd think the Doctor would know by now, but he's like, no, silly human.
735 years of this, and he still hasn't caught on. But they land, and I believe they say it's the UNIT base or whatever, but in the past.
Yes.
That's correct. Yeah, it's a building, an old priory, which I guess is where priests hang out. I think they reveal later that it was burned to the ground at some point, and we find out how that happened, but then eventually the UNIT headquarters was built on this spot.
Which is kind of the Doctor's defense for being so far away from where he intended to go. He's like, technically, I'm in the right place.
He's good at getting you to either the right place but the wrong time, or the right time but the wrong place. One of those two. Or the right-ish time, give or take a couple of years. And inside this place is a guy who wears a fez and plays the organ.
You were so excited at the fez.
Yeah, it's a fez. Fezzes are cool. I forget his name. I think I have it in my notes somewhere, but in my notes he's just called Fez. Like, every single time.
It's okay. He dies pretty quickly.
So he's playing the organ.
Mm-hmm.
And you see him playing the organ. But there's times that there's organ music playing, and he has left the organ.
Definitely.
So I'm not sure when it's, like, diegetic.
There was one time where he was playing the organ, and he got up, walked away, and then it was, like, still playing. And I was like, is that a sting that just happens to be the same as what he was playing, or...
He's using his magical fez powers.
Right. Maybe he's possessed by Sutek, and Sutek is the one playing the organ. I guess we could sort of hand-wave it that way.
He wants some mood music. Villains need their mood music.
It's a very theatrical villain.
And then he gets a visitor, who he does not want. He wants to be left alone. And it's this old guy who is mad that someone else has been banned from the house. Because they're both friends of Scarman, I think. This is Scarman's place or whatever. But yes. Scarman has said that no one can come in until he returns.
He's been missing. Or no one's really heard or seen from him for a while. You know, on account of the mummy stuff.
I think the implication, this old guy is Dr. Warlock, which is a great name. He seems a little bit put off that this, you know, foreign guy is here telling me I can't come in and see my friend.
There's both Scarman and Warlock. This is full of, like, superhero characters. Or supervillain, rather. I don't know Fez's name, but I assume he probably has a suitably supervillainous name as well.
I looked it up. It's Ibrahim Namin.
That's pretty good.
Kind of rhymes. Yeah, so that's a pretty good name.
I'd buy a comic book character named that. So the Doctor and Sarah Jane are sort of poking around the place.
As they do.
They come across a locked door, so the Doctor is going to pick it with a a lockpick that he got from Marie Antoinette.
Always name dropping.
I don't know why I just didn't use the Sonic. I guess the Sonic hasn't gotten quite to the level that it will get to of just doing everything.
That and...
He wants to name drop Marie Antoinette.
Exactly.
And then they get caught by basically the butler, I guess. And the doctor pretends that they're purchasing the place, that they're looking around to buy it. And the butler's like, I don't buy that. I see through your ruse immediately.
I know exactly who you are. The doctor and Sarah Jane are like,
oh? I highly doubt it. Who are we?
You're right. That is exactly who we are.
Because the butler thinks that they are with Warlock. And that they're like sneaking around, looking around while Warlock's, you know, distracting Fez guy. But butler guy sort of helps them out and is like, does... Get out of here if you know what's good for you, sort of thing. But not in a bad, like, not in a mean way. Like, in a I'm helping you out way.
Again, don't get caught.
So they sneak out the window and sneak around the building. That's what they do.
There's a lot of sneaking. Really fantastic scene of them, like, crawling up against the walls underneath of the windows. Sneaking's always fun.
I agree. It's fun to watch them doing that. And they're outside the window listening, I guess, to Warlock and Nameen. But as they left the room... After they went out the window, the sarcophagus starts to open.
Bum, bum, bum. I'm trying to remember. I read somewhere that the location for this place, the big mansion or whatever. Yeah, it's a mansion. Belonged to somebody famous, and I don't remember who it was. I read it somewhere, and now I cannot find it. So...
Thanks for bringing it up.
So that was...
that was almost a Joe fact.
Joe fact!
That was almost, but not quite, something interesting. So yes, the sarcophagus does the thing. It basically kills the butler. Whatever's in it. We don't see. But we just hear him scream, and then everybody sort of rushes into the room, and the sarcophagus shuts as they come in, basically. They look at the butler and say he's been strangled. And the guy in the fez, rather than being upset by this... seems very pleased by this.
Like, suspiciously pleased?
Warlock's just like, what's wrong with you? And Fez pulls a gun out on him and just shoots him. Like, the doctor rushes up and, like, tries to stop him. Doesn't move quite fast enough, because Warlock does get shot. But, like, the doctor, like, flings his scarf over the Fez guy and, like...
Yeah, that was smart. I'd like to see him use the scarf more often to thwart bad guys.
Some scarf foo. Is that a bad... That's probably a terrible name for that.
It's okay.
You got anything better?
No, that's why I said it's okay.
But they get Warlock out of the mansion. And the Fez guy opens the sarcophagus and has this really fancy green ring that he green lanterns the mummy with. Brings it to life.
I like the mummy. I like how ridiculously large its chest is.
Its bosom.
It's understand the way that it's built. It's very top heavy, but I like it.
It's a neat design, not necessarily practical, but I remember being struck by how cool they looked when I first saw this. And even, like I said, Kevin isn't into Doctor Who, but I showed him pictures that I took at a convention a couple of years ago where there was actually a guy dressed as Sutek with two mummies, and even Kevin thought they looked cool without any context.
Especially with, like, mummies, and even though these turn out to be robots later, it's easy enough to be like, well, they look like mummies. Yeah. And then they look like, you know, very simple people underneath. So it's nice to see somebody take something and give a unique design to it.
Yeah, mummies tend to be sort of, like, smaller and, like, wasted away almost, because they're, like, basically just, like, skeletons wrapped in bandages. So these dudes are like bulky and big, which is not what you typically expect to see of a mummy.
More like a robot hiding and pretending to be a mummy.
Yeah, I wonder why why does Sutek disguise them as mummies as opposed to just letting their robot parts show?
I'm telling you, he's just very theatrical.
Yeah, because they're in a sarcophagus, so...
I guess he's gotta, give them the trappings of being Egyptian.
He's like, I've got an aesthetic. We're all gonna work with it.
That makes sense.
It's all about style. Mm-hmm. My next note just says, guy falls down. I'm terrible at taking notes.
We have, a chase scene, basically.
Doctor and Sarah Jane are carrying Warlock out to get him to somewhere.
Somewhere safe. They're being chased.
And Sarah Jane runs ahead to go get help because he's dying. Sarah Jane is like running through the woods and sees one of the mummies. Yeah, there's just a lot of like Fez guys following them. The mummy, they're like trying to get stay out of sight of the mummies. There's just a lot of walking around in the woods. But Sarah Jane does find someone to help. Is he the brother of Scarman?
Yeah, this is Lawrence Scarman.
Just a couple of Scarman. They bring Warlock to him, and he offers to call the police because that's what you should do. And the doctor says no.
The doctor's like, "Why would you do that? I'm already here. You already have something better than the police."
And then he's
not wrong, to be fair.
He's like, "Well, what exactly? I mean, what do you do? What's why are you so special?" And he's like, "I don't know." But he just says something like, "Time is my business," and then just stares.
I wrote that down. Something is interfering with time, and time is my business.
Both the doctor and Sutek are very dramatic. They are equals. Well matched. He goes up to Sarah Jane and he's like, "Who is this guy?" And she's like, "Oh, he's just the doctor."
He's just like that. Don't worry about it.
So I love that. She just like he keeps being dramatic and then she just immediately cuts it down. I love companions who do that. That's why Donna Noble is like one of my faves. But this is also, she basically says we're time travelers, and says that she's from 1980,
which is correct, right?
Like, I think so far we're good.
Doesn't cause any controversy
yet. It's okay. Just stuff later that's going to contradict that.
Yeah, because it was always kind of understood that the unit stories were like 10 years ahead of the current time, or you know, in the near future,
because it was when the first one, which was what, Web of Fear,
I
believe. Oh, was that when it actually established a date? I didn't know that.
I think so. I think it says it's like slightly in the future, and then at some point somebody forgot. But right now, I thought it was going to become a problem a lot sooner, but it seems
like
they're still
in the unit stuff.
I thought it was going to be like, yeah, just
like they were constantly like, "What year is it?" and like getting it confused and stuff.
Yeah, but that it hasn't happened yet. So far, we're still solid. So far, we're still going good.
No controversy. We're very firmly in the 80s.
Well, right now, we're actually in 1911.
Okay.
Sarah Jane's from the 80s, but this serial takes place in 1911. This Scarman fella has invented something. I don't know what it is, but it's 40 years ahead of its time.
It was basically, I understood it, kind of like a radio, but for like space
radio,
farther away,
space transmission interceptor radio thing.
Sure.
And he turns it on to do a demo to like, "Hey, look how it works," and then it immediately explodes. So he's well matched with the doctor.
The doctor's good at building things that explode,
whether they do that on purpose or not. But the device was tuned into Mars. The doctor's like, "There's just a your device is fine. It's just there's something very, I don't know, explodey transmitting from Mars."
He pulls out a smaller version of the machine out of his pocket and is like, "Hang on, I want to get that signal." The guy's like, "Well, wait, what is that?" And he's like, "Oh, it's like your thing, but you know, from the future."
And cooler.
And better.
The doctor does understand that advanced things get smaller. We watch these serials that were clearly made in the 70s that are set in the future.
That wasn't
like
the case for a long time.
Just computers that take up huge rooms. That's not how it is in the future. Now it's just a tiny little thing you put in your pocket. But he's going to figure out the pattern, and he does. And it basically says, "Beware Sutek." Or they say, or Set. So Set is Sutek. Sutek is Set.
Yeah, it's another, I think, just another name for the same god.
Ben is glory.
Yes, exactly.
And the doctor immediately is like, "Oh no, this is the most dangerous thing that we've ever faced."
It's actually, like, legit frightening when the doctor, anytime you have an episode where you're going up against something and the doctor is frightened, you're like, "Well, that can't be good." Immediately you're like, if the doctor's afraid, then so am I. Honestly, this serial is tense. There were parts during it where I was like holding on to Joe's shoulder and like hiding my face.
I remember when I first watched it, and I didn't actually get into like where I started with Doctor Who, but actually the first story I ever saw was The Five Doctors, coincidentally. But then my PBS station immediately went back to the start of Tom Baker with Robot. I was, you know, still interested, but not really grabbed by it. And of course, later I'd get to appreciate, you know, Genesis of the Daleks and things like that. The Daleks didn't really mean anything to me at the time. But it was this story that really cemented my fandom. And there was just something about it, something about the atmosphere. And I think it is genuinely scary at times. And that's probably one of the things that held on to me. Also, I was into mythology when I was a teenager. So I think the, you know, connecting it to the Egyptian mythology was cool to me.
We have been getting a lot scarier, a lot more horror influenced.
Yeah, definitely these first few years of Tom Baker's era, where Philip Hinchcliffe was the producer, have a lot of horror influence to them.
I've actually been really enjoying it. Like, this serial and the last serial, Planet of Evil, are both so, like, they're just terrifying. Like, legitimately scary. And I've been waiting for that because, you know, New Who does a lot of, like, we're gonna try to scare children, you know, like
we
that.
We want you behind the couch.
So I've been waiting to see when that becomes a thing, because it hasn't really, other than that one creepy thing in Fury from the Deep. But for the most part, it's been your standard just fighting monsters thing, not actually just straight up horror. But yeah, the Doctor says this Sutekh is basically almost unstoppable.
Stronger than the Time Lords.
Scarman's like, well, I'll get this rifle or whatever. And the Doctor's like, I don't need a gun. And, like, heads out. And then he's like, I wasn't offering it for you. It's for me. My next note says, disco mummies.
You're so great at notes.
Well, that's because there's lights and stuff.
We start to see the multicolored lights.
The sarcophagus does its lights thing for the first time. Got it. It is very disco-esque.
What was Ian calling it in the chat when we were watching it? He called it the, I don't want to say Skittles, but maybe it was Skittles.
Smarties, I think, because yes. That's the British Smarties are like M&Ms. I wasn't sure if he was referring to that or to our pastel kind of Smarties that we have in the U.S.
It's like little chalky things. Both are fairly accurate, I'd say.
Yeah, they're both colorful.
The Smarty sarcophagus. And a figure walks out of the sarcophagus in a... My note says, a dark astronaut. He's all in black. He has a helmet. Oh, and it's really cool when he, like, walks, smoke, like, rises up off of his feet.
This is a very good effect. I think they must have used dry ice.
Yeah, it is so cool, though.
He's very Darth Vader-esque.
And he is the servant of Sutekh, basically. Because, well, Fez guy's like, I'm a servant of Sutekh. And he's like, I'm a servant of Sutekh. He needs no others. Because is he Sutekh? He's not Sutekh.
Okay, he's...
He speaks with Sutekh's voice, but so, like, Sutekh speaks through Scarman later, too. So I think he's just... Do we see this servant again? Or is this the last time we see him? He might be kind of like a transitionary figure. Because Sutekh hasn't, you know, right, he's on Mars and he can't manifest on Earth yet. But this is kind of one of his forms, I think.
I think this guy turns into Scarman.
Oh yeah.
Not the brother, but the one
Marcus.
Went into the. I think he's basically transporting from the tomb in Egypt to, I guess, to Mars, to here. It's a long way to go about it.
And I guess they decided the astronaut disguise was too much to maintain, and they just let him wear his normal clothes after this.
Maybe he has to wear it to go through the sarcophagus, the light tunnel thing.
Maybe.
Sure.
The disco tunnel. But yeah, he's like, I don't need your help, Fez guy, even though he doesn't even thank him for getting him here.
No, he just straight up murders him.
Yeah, he just grabs him and he just smokes up.
Which again is one of, like, at that moment I was like, oh, okay, this is gonna be a scary serial. Okay, got it.
And that is the cliffhanger. That is the end of episode one. We are now into episode two, which I've called The Gift of Death, because that's what he says he gives people. It's the gift of death. He takes the hood off, the little helmet off, and he's Scarman, except way paler.
Yeah, he's got kind of red-rimmed eyes and looks pretty corpse-like.
Yet no one else seems to, like, question. Like,
what do you mean?
Like, he bumps into a couple of different people that are just like, Scarman, Scarman, you're Scarman, what's up? And, like, it takes them forever to just be like, there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
I mean, they say, like, you seem a little off, but not like, what's wrong with you?
Why do you look like a vampire?
Why are you talking about the humans?
You know, maybe back then, you know, everyone was ill, was sick all the time with something, and so they just assumed he had consumption or something.
That's rude to bring it up.
And he was always kind of dehumanizing to people, so...
Maybe that's why Dr. Warlock wanted to see him. He's like, dude, I gotta give you something for your illness.
Evil Scarman. That's how I'm gonna separate them. Evil Scarman and Good Scarman.
I mean, they have first names.
No, they don't. Good Scarman's Lawrence, right?
Yes, and this is Marcus.
Marcus. Marcus and Lawrence. Marcus and the mummies go about setting up a shield around the house. Force field thing. With little pots. Little Egyptian pots, right?
Urns, yeah.
Yeah, the urns. The doctor, Sarah Jane, and Lawrence, I believe, have snuck back in at this point. Yes, they've snuck back into the mansion. The doctor basically fills them in on, like, who Sutek is and all that kind of stuff. And says that the coffin, the sarcophagus, is a time-space tunnel.
He calls them a specific kind of alien, and I can't remember what it is.
Osirens.
Osirens.
Osiris was an Egyptian god, too, I think. There was Osiris and Horus, and one was the son of the other, but I'm not sure which way it goes.
I really like the idea of, like, just, like, very quickly being like, oh, yeah, the gods are real because they're aliens. Like, all Egyptian mythology is based on these guys.
And we saw that with other mythology in the demons in John Pertwee's story. You know, the demonic figure is actually a type of alien god as well.
If you like Egyptian mythology as aliens, you should check out Stargate.
Okay.
That's basically what it is. I haven't seen a lot of it, but it's basically a similar sort of concept. The Stargates are like Egyptian and it shoots you to other planets and stuff. So that's where like the Egyptian gods came from, was space. The doctor almost gets sucked into the disco tunnel, but he throws a watch in it and that stops it?
Stops it.
Okay.
Don't ask for an explanation. Just move on to the next thing.
Then we have a character that reminded me a lot of a character from Spearhead from Space, which is just this hunter that gets like mixed up in everything, who just sort of like runs around being comic relief for a while, because he set out a trap for rabbits, and instead of catching a rabbit, he catches one of the mummies.
Watching the mummy just sort of struggle with the trap too, like very slowly, like just shaking its ankle trying to get it off, is great.
They lose a little bit of their minutes. The hunter takes his rabbit and tries to get out of there, but like keeps bumping into like the force field and all that stuff, and he's just kind of just running around everywhere like, where's it? Can't get anywhere. And this is like when Marcus goes to that place where they've got Warlock all resting up because of his wound, his gunshot wound. And this is like the scene where like Marcus is like being all evil and Warlock's like, what's up, buddy? You seem a little, I don't know, evil today?
Doesn't he ask about where is the other Scarman?
I think he does, yeah. Which is, that's not how you'd refer to your brother.
That should be a dead giveaway.
Yeah, he says that, and I do believe he says humans instead of, like, their names or people. No one says humans except aliens.
I mean, I say humans all the time, but...
You're questionably human.
Thank you.
That's all you've ever wanted.
It truly is.
My note says mummy attacks Marcus, but I don't think that's right. Doctor wakes up and is pedantic. That's it's like when they hide in the, they're hidden in this little like secret compartment thing. And she says, we're in something. And he's like, no, technically we're in this. And she's
like, oh yeah, she says what they're hidden in. And he's like, they don't have those in these types of homes. And right. She's like, you've been awake for 5 seconds and you're already annoying me. Could you go back to being passed out, please? No worries that I just completely saved your life by dragging you around and finding you a hiding space. No, you want to like quibble about this detail. No, thank you.
Well, those actually weren't around in 1911. They were actually called... Yeah, that sort of thing.
Being a dude on the internet.
The doctor is a dude on the internet. I don't think that's the first time that's been said on this podcast. Though to be fair, that might have been about Harry.
Oh, Harry, yeah, Harry's very mansplainy to Sarah.
But the doctor says that basically he wants to get that like green ring. He basically says he needs to reverse the polarity of the Egyptian ring.
That was a nice callback.
I think it's the first time he said it. But they're hiding from Marcus, who's come back into the thing, and Marcus is heading straight towards their secret hiding spot. Almost opens it, but is shot by the hunter, who has just decided to go vigilante.
Maybe did he see him kill Warlock, or
yes,
or he heard Warlock getting killed and then saw Marcus come out of the
That's why my note's confusing. My note says mummy attacks Marcus, and I was like, what? That doesn't make any sense. The mummy attacked Warlock, That's what it was. Early on in my notes, I get names confused sometimes. Okay, yeah. So, yeah. The hunter saw the mummy killing Warlock. The hunter takes matters into his own hands and shoots. Does he actually shoot Marcus or just shoots at him?
Whatever happens, like, it gets undone. Like, time rolls back.
Yeah, they do that reverse shot.
I'm so easily impressed by reverse shots. I love them. They always look good.
Yeah, like, there's, like, smoke coming out of his gunshot wound or whatever, and it just goes back into him.
That was a cool effect.
It's such a simple effect to do a reverse shot, but it's effective every time I've seen it. I love reverse shots so much. It's also, like, very appropriate because I'm pretty sure that they use a lot of reverse footage for, like, vampires and stuff in horror movies. So giving this the sort of, like, I mean, it's not, you know, vampires, it's mummies, but, like, that whole sort of horror movie vibe, just using reverse effects. Then the mummies chase after the hunter. The hunter has become the hunted, which gives the doctor and Sarah Jane and Lawrence time to get out of their hiding spot. The doctor gets the ring from the Fez guy's dead body. And the doctor realizes that the mummy and Marcus and all them are building a rocket. And that the mummies are not mummies, the mummies are robots. He also says that Sutek is basically trapped under a pyramid on Mars, or inside a pyramid on Mars. That's, they sort of locked him there because he's kind of...
real shitty.
He's, like, basically indestructible, so they basically had to just lock him somewhere. They couldn't really, like, just destroy him.
Well, that, and what he says is that, like, it went against their morals. That, like, if they destroyed him, they'd be just as bad as he was.
I feel like this happens a lot in science fiction, or maybe just a lot in Doctor Who. There's this, you know, all-powerful being that's locked away, but someone accidentally releases it, or releases it on purpose.
I mean, I'm very, like, anti- murder, but it would stop a lot of things from happening in these shows.
To be fair, that's kind of the conclusion that the serial comes to.
Yeah, we'll get to it later, but, you know, no one else really survives this this little escapade.
I don't know if it's happened before. I mean, there was the massacre of St. Bartholomew's Eve, but that still led to, like, a descendant of Dodo, so you know that someone made it out. I can't think of anything.
I think it may start happening more from here on out. If memory serves. Spoilers.
I'm used to it. From New Who. That's why I really like that first Moffat two-parter where...
Everybody Lives?
Yeah, just this once, Everybody Lives. That was a good bit. They get into the TARDIS, because the Doctor's got to do stuff in the TARDIS, and Lawrence is very excited. Like, and it's so early in the run of this show that it's not being... you know, played against. It's just straight up he is, like, excited that the TARDIS is bigger on the inside. I feel like we can't do that anymore on the show. It has to be subverted, like, every time. So it's nice to just see this just, like, very excited, like, oh, it's bigger on the inside, this is amazing! Because you don't get that anymore.
And Lawrence is an inventor himself, so I think he appreciates that this is advanced technology and not just magic that he's looking at.
It's basically magic. He says, it's something like that novelist fellow would write, Wells. And I thought that was cute. And Sarah's like, why can't we just leave? We know the world doesn't end in 1911, so something will surely happen to fix it.
And then a terrifying thing happens.
This really made an impact on me, and... it made me wonder, like, why, certainly back in the Aztecs, the doctor talks about, you know, you can't change history. And, you know, you'd think that this would be touched on more in a time travel show, but they really kind of use it sparingly. Mm-hmm. But the idea that, you know, what happens to stop Sutek is it has to be them, because if they were to leave, the doctor shows Sarah what 1980 looks like.
Which it looks like an apocalyptic movie from the 80s. So it's very appropriate.
But, like, he opens the TARDIS doors and is like, there, like, you want to leave. There's the 80s, go, kind of thing. And she's like, okay, I get it. We'll stay and help. Like, it's very harsh.
So this must, you know, this must be one of the biggest threats that the doctor has faced. You know, he's already talked about how this, you know, even too powerful for the Time Lords to stop, so that really brings it home.
So they go back to 1911 and exit out of the window. That window's getting a lot of use.
Yeah, I was going to say, they spend a lot of time going through windows.
Marcus talks to the time tunnel, the disco tunnel, about the rocket. And is this the first time that we actually see Sutek in his little throne room?
Yeah.
I like his design. It reminds me a little bit of Omega.
It actually looks more like an Omega design that you haven't seen yet.
Me? Personally?
Yeah. Like, it looks like an Omega design that will come later. His helmet, specifically, is what I'm thinking of.
I didn't know Omega came back.
Oh, spoilers.
I thought he died! The Doctor and Sarah Jane and Lawrence, I think they go to Lawrence's house to sort of set up base, basically. Lawrence is real sad about his brother. He's very, broken up about it. And the Doctor keeps having to be like, that's not your brother. He's under the influence of Sutek. Your brother's probably dead, let's face it.
I mean, he calls him a corpse.
Yeah.
He said, that's the walking corpse of your brother and not your brother.
He's not mincing words. Like the first episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer when Giles is like, that's not your friend. When you're looking at him, that's not your friend. You're looking at the thing that killed him sort of deal. But Lawrence does not fully take this to heart.
Yeah, unfortunately. If he did, this story would be over two episodes earlier.
There's a lot of plots that just rely on people making dumb choices.
Avengers? Are we talking about Infinity War?
I think the plan is they're going to shoot this rocket that they're building or whatever to blow up a signal, the shield, around Sutek's pyramid thing. And it'll free him. That's what the rocket's for, right?
Yes.
Oh, around this time is when the mummies have finally caught the hunter. They crush him, like, in a hug. They robot hug him to death. It's the hug of death.
Yeah.
You seemed, like, very amused by that, Tony.
It was an amusing visual, I guess. I don't know.
Is that how you want to go, in the embrace of a robot?
I mean, I wouldn't make any complaints if that's how it turned out. Because I'd be dead.
Good point.
But then Lawrence shoots the robots. It says Sarah Jane turns on thing, and I don't know what the thing she turned on was.
The Doctor's trying to jam the signal. It says the machine that Scarman, that Lawrence built, but the Doctor repurposed it, I think, to try to jam the signal so that Sutek can't communicate with Scarman and the mummies anymore. And then the rocket won't get launched and Sutek won't get freed.
And Lawrence doesn't want to turn it on because he's worried about how it might affect his brother. The mummies come into Lawrence's house and then
fight.
It's going down.
It's another scary cliffhanger, and Sarah is directly in peril.
She's in peril a small bit too long for the cliffhanger.
The shot of her face, the close-up.
Yeah. It's like, oh no, Sarah. Oh, it's still going. And we're done. That is the end of episode 2. We are now into episode 3, which I have called The Enemy of Life.
Yes.
The device that the Doctor was fiddling with explodes.
Of course.
Again. It's exploded twice this serial. And the Doctor gets really mad at Lawrence for letting his emotions get the better of him.
Oh, this is where he says the line about his brother being an animated human cadaver.
Very harsh. But he's like, listen, you gotta do what you gotta do. Like, this is serious business. That's not him. You just gotta put that aside, because otherwise we're all dead.
Lawrence takes none of this to heart, and still tries to reach his brother, basically.
While Sarah Jane and the Doctor are going to go look at the rocket, which is in a pyramid of its own, because that's the shape that works best.
For aesthetic reasons.
Pyramids just work better. Have you ever seen those, like, money-making things? They're a pyramid, and they work perfectly. I've never had a single problem with one of them. I mean, I'm still waiting to get the money back, but right. I'm sure it'll come.
Right.
You know, eventually. Right? Okay.
Selling essential oils?
So,
they're gonna go blow up the rocket.
Right. Lawrence suggests that, I believe.
He wants to go with them, and they're like, no, you just stay here. And he's like, oh, you think I'm going to disappoint you again? And they're like, yep, stay here.
Well, the Doctor gives him a task and asks him to unwrap the mummy.
Which looks very cool on the inside. It's more of like a wire frame than like a real solid robot, but it's pretty neat looking.
So the Doctor is trying to find a way to get past the shield. He's like, we need to find the door, which he finds with a stick, poking along the wall with a stick, and he finds the urn. He basically has to sonic it and do stuff to get it to
Okay. What does he call it? Like trying to wind a watch with a chisel? How he's explaining what exactly it is he's doing and how he's... It's a very delicate process that he doesn't have the correct tools for.
All I remember is that it's the Doctor and Sarah Jane just sort of bantering back and forth, and they're absolutely adorable.
Precious. They are precious.
This is kind of my, you know, my archetype for a doctor-companion relationship because, you know, I saw a lot of doctors and companions briefly in The Five Doctors, and then, you know, it was really Tom Baker and Sarah Jane for a while.
They're so good together.
Yeah.
I know we've only watched a handful of serials, and this is only, what, the second one that's just the two of them?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it's already, like, up there with, like, Two and Jamie for me, so...
Oh, yeah. They have such an easy dynamic where even if the two of them are in a scene and if, like, nothing else is happening, they're having a good time and, like, it makes it a good scene.
So, Sutek is immediately, like, alerted that something is messing with the shield around the mansion. I believe he yells, "Interference!" And he knows that there is an extraterrestrial involved in this, because humans are dumb. I'm pretty sure that's his entire reasoning behind it. And I think it's also during whenever he's monologuing, he's probably talking to Marcus about all this, but that's when he says that all life is his enemy, and he's basically wanting to just destroy everything. Like, I don't even think he's like, "I'll keep you around, Marcus." He's just like, "Nah, I'm tired of all of it." If I'd been trapped in a pyramid for who knows how long, I wouldn't want to destroy everything. Because then you've just got what you had in the room, but bigger.
That, like, is a good point.
I'd want to experience things.
I guess that's why you're not an evil alien god.
Yeah, he just wants revenge on, just out of spite, he's just going to burn it all down.
See, now that's something I could see me doing.
See, you know, I'd be like, I just want to get out and be like, "Hey, what movies have come out recently?"
You're going to use your godlike powers just to warp time and see all the movies?
Yeah. Or, "Hey, I haven't had a burger in so long." What is he eating there? Nothing, probably.
He probably doesn't need to.
That's sad. Eating is, like, one of my favorite activities.
Absolutely.
Okay, if I hadn't eaten for thousands of years, I could imagine being, like, a little grumpy.
That's true. You do get hangry.
I do.
Oh, me too.
If you're thousands of years worth of hangry.
If I don't eat dinner, like if it's a half hour after when I'm expected to be eating dinner, I'm just like, "What is happening?"
It's true. Your whole brain goes into meltdown.
I can't believe I'm not eating right now.
What's funny about it is, like, you don't even know that's what's happening until after you've eaten, and then you're like, "Oh, I feel less like murdering people now. What's up with that? Oh, I was just hungry the whole time. My bad."
I turn into the, like, Incredible Hulk when I don't have food.
I'm glad we've established the parameters in which you can become murderous. And it's just that you're hungry.
It's good to know. Yeah, Kevin made a habit of reminding me to pack snacks when we're going to be on the road. Or, you know, we don't know exactly where we're going. You know, we're going out somewhere, but we don't know exactly what kind of food we're going to find.
That's smart. You're smarter it than is. Me.
Yeah, because we always end up in a car ride like, "We need to pull over somewhere now before something bad happens."
You know, we should just listen to those Snickers ads.
Sorry, we are so off track now. This is an important discussion, though.
Yes, food is always an important discussion. So,
Sutex in his pyramid, that's what we were talking about. He wants to destroy everything.
Maybe if he got out, ate something first, he would kind of forget about it. He'd be fine. "Oh, I was just hangry."
Maybe that's why the doctor's always offering people jelly babies. Like, it's yes. Worked a handful of times.
You're not evil, you're just hungry.
You're just hungry, and they do. They take a jelly baby, and you're like, "You're right. My bad. You know what? I'm going to call off the whole evil plan."
Sarah Jane and the doctor are, like, looking around for stuff to use, and they're inside this shack. Lawrence has said that there is explosives, basically, in this shed. I don't remember why there was explosives. Probably some sort of excavation thing.
For the
or
rocket?
Something.
Oh, no, no, no.
No, no, no. It's just, I forget what it was. It's some sort of explosive.
Yeah,
and
remember.
Sarah Jane finds it in the shed.
She finds it and tosses it to the doctor.
And the doctor's like, "Whoa! Be very careful." And Sarah Jane's like, "Oh, whoops."
Yeah, she just pulls this oops face. The doctor's like, great, you're gonna kill me for sure.
He's like literally like sweating. Like, oh god, oh god. And it's about this time that Marcus has found the tampered with urn that has let the doctor in, and then Marcus goes to Lawrence's house and is like going to ask, like, where's the doctor, where's Sarah Jane and all that. And this is, you know, Lawrence being
very misguided and still thinking. I mean, he does almost get through to him for a moment.
Just almost. He shows him like a picture of them as children, right?
Yeah, it's very sad.
It almost works, and he's like, I'm evil. And kills him, strangles him to death.
Thanks for the clarification.
You're welcome. But the doctor and Sarah Jane have explosives, but no way to set it off. There's like no timer or anything, so they gotta figure it out. And they go back, and like Lawrence is just like casually sitting in a chair, or so you think.
Sarah Jane's like, hey, wake up, and he fall and like knocks him out of the chair.
Yeah, that's a very horror movie type of thing too.
It's terrifying. And like Sarah Jane is so disturbed by this because she just pushed over a dead guy.
Like, Sarah Jane's sad, and the doctor is more just kind of mad.
Yeah. He's like, I don't have time to deal with this, so.
Like, he's not like,
and this pisses Sarah Jane off.
Yeah. He's like, being sad isn't accomplishing anything. We've got to buckle down, basically, and you know, save the day. Like, this is one dead guy, and that's bad and sad, and it's just going to get worse if we don't stop it. He's like, I'm not going to get sad about it. I'm going to get proactive about it. Which, that's good. Me, I would just like, well, I'm done.
People have started dying now. I'm out.
Well, they already know what's going to happen if they don't succeed, so.
I guess that's motivation.
They've established the stakes, and yeah.
And we've already established that, like, Time Lords can't stop him. I think they even said it was, like, what did stop him was just, like, a big coalition of gods, basically. I think he said something like 740 gods.
That's a straight mythological thing, right? I'm not super familiar with Egyptian mythology. Like, watching this episode, I was like, oh, wow, I know basically nothing. They would, like, name drop things, and I'd be like, nope, ringing zero bells.
I don't know either.
I think it's a reference to a specific story, but I am uncertain.
It's a definitely reference in this story.
Fair enough.
Just quote this in all of your mythology homework. So they're like, we need to get closer to the rocket and all that. And Sarah Jane mummifies the doctor. She wraps him. I guess, did he have to get inside that wireframe thing? Because he looks exactly the same.
Is it actually him? Is Tom Baker in that thing?
You know, that's something I'm wondering. Was that Tom Baker?
Or is he standing by the side giving lines?
I'm guessing not, yeah. I'm guessing he's just wrapping up the frame again.
Like, for one, you can hear him.
I really want that to be Tom Baker inside the outfit,
yeah,
though.
I don't know why, but I understand. I understand that sentiment.
Like, there's no reason for it to be him. It's probably easier to not be him. But I really want it to be Tom Baker inside it.
Method acting.
So the rocket is basically done. It just needs coordinates for Mars, and they basically gotta send the last piece over from the mansion to the rocket. The doctor goes to the pyramid with the explosives. Sarah Jane is off in the distance, and she's going to shoot it with a rifle. The doctor leaves it on, like, I don't know, the porch of the pyramid. I don't know. And it starts to walk away and is caught by Marcus. Marcus is like, halt. And the doctor stops for like a half second and then keeps going. He's like, hey, stop. Like, he thought he could just walk away from it. But Marcus is like, are you doing okay, robot? Because I have a task for you. And gives him the thing that is basically the coordinates. It's a little accidental win for them, I guess.
Yeah, that's useful.
But I think the doctor gets out of there, and Sarah Jane shoots the explosives. And it briefly goes poof and then zips back down.
Yeah, another reverse
shot.
Which I love her reaction to that, just being like, I shot it. I know I shot it.
Sutek has basically control. He's keeping
holding it
in place.
Yes. With mental energy. It's established earlier that like everything he's able to do, with mental energy.
Eventually the doctor's gonna get this plan of just like, we just need to distract him for a moment, and then he'll forget about the explosives, and then it'll go boof.
Yes.
So the Doctor goes to the mansion. He almost walks in on Marcus and Sutek chit-chatting. And then he just sort of like, oh, they're not really paying attention. And just walks into the room. Not even like really hiding.
Nope.
Nobody in Doctor Who has peripheral vision whatsoever. Marcus and Sutek finish their chat. The Doctor turns on the disco tunnel. And then the Doctor goes into the disco tunnel and walks into Sutek's room. Sutek is like, whoa, what's going on? And then the rocket explodes.
Plan worked.
Plan worked. But then Sutek's not happy about this and glows his eyes at the Doctor, and the Doctor screams in pain.
It's another thing that's just genuinely really frightening.
And that is the end of episode 3. Oh, you're now into episode 4, which I, again, have two titles for. The Plaything of Sutek.
Oh my god.
And The Corridor of Eternity.
All of Sutek's lines are, like, ridiculously kind of badass.
They are, and it's just a great voice performance, too.
Absolutely.
Gabriel Wolf is the actor.
I've read that he's reprised the character in Big Finish stuff, too.
Really?
Yeah, and he's also the voice of the Beast in the Satan Pit Impossible Planet, so.
Ah.
He's very, very good at it. But yeah, he's basically just, like, questioning and torturing the Doctor all the same time, and he's basically like, I could do this for centuries. I could just keep you alive on the brink of death, just torture you for as long as I want to. This is the point where the Doctor should be like, Jelly Baby.
Yeah, exactly.
And he's like, you're a Time Lord, and I don't like Time Lords. And the Doctor's like, I rejected the Time Lords. I'm just a traveler. Sutek makes him kneel before him. He says, serve me. It's very intense. It's very intense. Meanwhile, I believe Sarah Jane has gotten captured by Marcus. Sutek's like, you can destroy her. And the Doctor's like, what? No, no. And he's like, oh, wait, never mind. Don't destroy her because the Doctor's interested in her. And I can probably exploit that. And Sutek finds out about the TARDIS and realizes that could probably be used to his advantage to get out of this.
It was pyramid. At this point in the story that I was like, oh no, I hadn't even considered that as a possibility. Shit.
Yeah, the TARDIS hasn't really been utilized a whole lot in previous serials, I feel like. It's mostly just a thing to get you from story to story.
Yeah, it's the starting point and the ending point, and sometimes they often get cut off from it so they can't get back, but now it actually does feature into the plot.
I feel that's a very recent thing. I think it happened maybe in the Time Monster. It was utilized. It was utilized in the last serial in Planet of Evil to get the antimatter back on the planet. Now it's being utilized again. I think that's really cool. I really like when the TARDIS is more involved in the plot instead of just dumping you off somewhere and then sort of going on. I really want an entire episode that's
in the TARDIS.
In the TARDIS.
Oh yeah. My gosh. I love shots in the TARDIS. Also, I want to know what everybody's bedroom looks like. Everybody who's ever traveled on the TARDIS, I want to know what their bedrooms look like. And I want to know what the TARDIS kitchen looks like. So bad. I mean, I know we got that machine. Like, that was the closest we got. It was, like, the first Doctor had that food machine with just, like, buttons on it.
And they're like, here's an egg.
Yeah, here's an egg cube or whatever it was. Didn't it dispense, like, gum?
Probably. I don't remember.
I forget what, like, it actually gave, but it was supposed to be, like, little futuristic food cubes. But I imagine somewhere on the ship now, there's, like, a great big kitchen.
I feel like that's the interior of the TARDIS is underutilized.
Yeah, it's bigger on the inside, but it's so much bigger on the inside. And I want to see all those little rooms and stuff.
I think that's why, like, 8's TARDIS is so cool to me. Because it's gigantic. And I feel like you should do that more often.
Well, and probably out of all of them, it feels the most, like, lived in.
Yeah, because there's, like, the library and everything.
8 actually spends time in the TARDIS as opposed to just using it as a vehicle. I mean, at least in the movie, more so than any of them, probably.
But yeah, now it's, like, now it's a plot device for the villain. He can use it to get out of the tomb. His little throne room. Also, at this point, there's a line he has that he says, your evil is my good. Man, he's so good at being bad. And then he threatens to just, like, mess up the Doctor's nervous system. He's just being villainous left and right, and it's really, really good. But he gets the TARDIS key and floats it out of the time tunnel to Marcus, and the Doctor's like, won't work because the TARDIS's controls are isomorphic, which means they only work when I use it. Which, that must stop being a thing.
I think he's bluffing. I don't think that it was the case.
Oh. He's just trying to get out.
Whether it's supposed to be the case or not, it probably doesn't work properly. So I think that it's just meant to be a bluff.
I do know, like, it's come up again that something is isomorphic, but I don't know if it comes up, like, specifically to the TARDIS.
But, I mean, definitely other people have flown the TARDIS.
Yeah.
So
I also imagine it has, like, settings. You can be like, look, these three are trusted people.
Sutek basically is going to send the Doctor out to go do it, and if he resists at all, they will kill Sarah Jane.
Can I just say that, like, mind control is one of those tropes that'll always, like, get to me. When, like, somebody's forced to doing something they don't want to do, that's always going to make me feel a feeling.
Because isn't there a shot, though, where, like, the Doctor says Sutek is supreme? That's terrifying.
This scared me almost as much as Midnight scared me.
Ooh.
I wouldn't go quite that far, but yeah.
Midnight's awfully scary.
Almost. Midnight, I would watch that scene, like, right before he gets almost thrown out. I would just watch that scene just because I was like, I need something that makes me feel like that. And so I would just watch that, like, just that scene on, like, YouTube or something. But it gives you a very similar feeling of not being in control of, like, you know, your own body, which I find terrifying.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
Definitely.
But Sutek tells Marcus, when the Doctor, you know, frees me and I'm all free and stuff, feel free to destroy the Doctor. So they get on the TARDIS. They go to Mars. We're on Mars now. There's not an ice warrior in sight.
They must still be hibernating. Or who knows what time. I mean, I guess, is this equivalent to 1911, or is this some other future time that's somehow connected to...
That's a good question.
I'd imagine it's still 1911.
It's the same time.
You know, if he gets loose, it'll cause the alternate 1980, where Marty's parents don't get back together. So I assume he's still in 1911. And there's, like, the, you know, the radio signals or whatever.
Right.
So, but once they get on Mars, Marcus opens the little secret door. He's like, thank you for your time. And the mummy strangles the Doctor. And then the mummy and Marcus go through the door. For, like, the third or fourth time, Sarah Jane cries over what is presumably the Doctor's dead body.
Yeah.
And he wakes up just to be like, hey, you're getting me all soggy. Knock it off. Man, if I was Sarah Jane, by the time he finally regenerated, I would just be, like, so unimpressed.
And then we get a scene that is very reminiscent of that Dalek serial, which Sarah Jane straight up name drops.
Death to the Daleks and the Exelon City.
The puzzles here are a little less childish. It's not like it's stuff on the back of a cereal box.
It's not
like
a game of hopscotch.
There's no floor cliffhanger. It's my favorite cliffhanger. Oh no, the floor! But Marcus goes in and almost opens the door, the first door, and Sutek's like, hold on a second. This seems too obvious. Find another button to open the door. There is a secret button that opens the door, and the first one would have just, you know, killed him or blown it up or something. And then Sarah Jane and the Doctor walk in and almost do the exact same thing. And so that's what happens. They're just going through all these
puzzles. Traps.
And so that's when they're basically really close to the end, right? And they do that popular gif I see everywhere where they walk in and then immediately
walk back out.
Like, oh, nope.
So is that after Sarah gets trapped in the cylinder?
Oh, no. Yeah. You're right.
That made an impact on me when I first saw it, because my dad had a book of logic puzzles by a guy named Raymond Smullyan, who was a logic professor who died just a few years ago. But his version of this puzzle was knights and knaves. Knights always tell the truth and knaves always lie. So there were various puzzles where you have to ask one of them a question to figure out the answer to something. So that's what the Doctor has to do to figure out which button will let Sarah go. And then this puzzle is also in the movie Labyrinth, a very similar one, where she has to pick the door to go through.
That is where I heard the puzzle for the first time, from the Labyrinth.
What was the solution in Labyrinth?
You have to ask... No, wait, I'll let you explain it, because I probably don't remember it right.
You ask one of them what the other one would say. The answer is A or B. And if you ask one, what would the other one say? And he says A, then either he's telling the truth and the other one was saying A, which would be a lie, or he's lying about what the other one would say and the other one is really going to say B.
Gotcha. I remember seeing one where, I don't know, was it Labyrinth? There was some movie where that was a similar situation, and then they just opened the door and threw one of the things into the door, and then it just, like, exploded, and they're like, oh, well, it's not that door, and they got through the other door.
What?
Yeah, I don't remember what that was, but I was like, that's a clever solution.
That's kind of like, you know, Indiana Jones shooting the guy with the saber.
Yeah, I think it was like two little frogs or something. And it lies and tells the truth and just chucks one of the frogs through the door.
That is a solution.
Oh, yeah, but like when she's in the tube before they release her with the logic puzzle, she's like, what do I do? And like,
you can't hear her.
And like the doctor basically like fogs up the tube and just writes, relax.
Yeah, that was funny.
But yeah, there's a lot of puzzles. There's that one. There's one he has to solve by using his scarf to measure things. It's fun. They have fun here. And Marcus turns into the thing that Sarah Jane saw,
which is, I guess, the true face of Sutek.
Sutek gets free. Marcus, in his thing, just turns into dust. Explodes into dust. It's very disturbing.
Uh-huh. Another very upsetting image that will probably stay with me always.
And then the Mystery Science Theater 3000 doors all start shooting open. Movie time! The Doctor and Sarah Jane rush out to get back to the TARDIS. And Sutek gets up off of his chair. And as Ian pointed out while we were watching it, you can see a hand, like, on the chair, like, stabilizing it. And then it quickly moves out of shot. And then Sutek turns into full-on Sutek all the way.
Sutek all the way.
The disco thing turns on, and Sutek's coming. But the Doctor and Sarah Jane have gotten in the TARDIS, and they've come back to the mansion. And basically, the Doctor messes with the time tunnel and traps Sutek in the time tunnel. Like, he can't get out. He's caught in the corridor of eternity.
Yeah, because it was going to take a few seconds for basically to travel from Mars to Earth through the time tunnel, and the Doctor knows this, so he's able to get there before Sutek does.
Time travel. It helps you out. And the sarcophagus thing explodes, and that's what starts the fire.
There's also, this is the scene where, like, Sutek is, he's explaining what he did to Sutek and how he's trapped in eternity and he's not basically going to be able to outlive that. The Doctor says, like, yep, that it wasn't their way to kill people, but they're not around anymore. I am. Oops. Like, so this is what's happening. So yeah, what we mentioned before about the Doctor kind of falling on the side of, like, sometimes you just gotta murder a dude. It makes things easier.
The DC way of thinking. And that's basically the end of the serial. They TARDIS out of there, out of the burning down mansion.
Yeah, and the Doctor makes a reference to 1666, which is the Great Fire of London, which may or may not show up in a future story.
See, I think he's just name-dropping things just to name-drop things. I think it's
absolutely.
He's full of shit.
Oh yeah, no doubt.
I feel like John Pertwee did that the most. But Tom Baker gets in his fair share of name dropping, too.
I think two may have done it once or twice. I don't think one did it at all.
Oh, no. One's way too dignified for that nonsense.
But that's it. That's the end of Pyramids of Mars. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with our final thoughts. Hey, listen to this ad for the Flopcast.
Nice.
Okay, let's talk about the Flopcast.
Where every week we drink a lot of coffee and we talk about comic books,
movies,
conventions,
music,
Saturday morning cartoons.
Oh, don't forget the coffee.
Lots of weird, obscure pop culture stuff from the 70s and 80s.
And chickens. Yeah, chickens.
This will be the stupidest half hour of your week.
We guarantee it.
You can find us on the ESO Network.
And Flopcast.net.
And we're back. Tony, do you know what time it is?
It is roughly about 9 o'clock, I think. Or 8 o'clock. 8:30.
Why can't you just, you know what time it is, and you never say what time it is?
I find your frustration amusing.
You are such a villain.
It's time for final thoughts.
It is! You said it! I'm so shocked.
Final thoughts!
This is a really solid story. Like I said, when I was first watching Doctor Who, this is kind of the first one that made me, maybe not the first one, but this is the one by the end of which I was like, okay, I'm a fan of this thing. I'm in it for the long haul. You know, part of that I think was just the very, you know, effective villain. You know, Sutekh just is genuinely scary. His minions are genuinely scary. They use some simple effects to very well. Like we mentioned, the, you know, the reverse shots and the smoke and the disco lights. And a couple things stood out to me, like the logic puzzle and the shots of future apocalypse 1980 if they don't solve this. So overall, the story made an impact on me back then, and I think it holds up. You know, I haven't necessarily gone back and watched a lot of Doctor Who. I'll pick and choose stories to rewatch, but this is one that I like to come back to. I think it's a solid story. Really, like I said, this is kind of my quintessential Doctor companion relationship, and I think it's very well demonstrated here, kind of what the appeal of this relationship is, that they really play off each other well, that Sarah stops the Doctor from taking himself too seriously, although this is a very serious situation and she kind of has to balance her natural tendency to poke holes in the Doctor with the fact that things could really go bad for the universe if they don't succeed.
Yeah, I love this serial a lot. It seems like we've gotten into a good streak of serials.
Absolutely.
I've been really excited about 4, and like I feel like this is, starting with like the last couple episodes, it feels like everything's clicked. Like, we've had a little bit of like figuring out what the show is now with this new Doctor and everything, and I feel like we had some bumps, like not knowing what to do with Harry Sullivan, you know, and just sort of transitioning out of the unit stuff. And now it feels like we've locked into what the fourth Doctor is, at least for a little while. I know, like, it's eventually going to get a little bit sillier, but at least right now, the show, it seems like the show knows what it's doing a little bit more than it had previously. I don't know, the story is really solid. It's really scary,
mm-hmm.
and it's funny. There's a lot of clever stuff in it. Because there's another Doctor Who serial, the Tomb of the Cybermen, which also sort of takes sort of Egyptian motifs and turns it into, you know, a Doctor Who episode. I think it's a lot better done here. A lot more interesting. And, like, the villain really doesn't do anything except sit in a chair for most of the serial and is absolutely terrifying. And that's really impressive to leave that much of an impression and doesn't even really leave his little closet. Yeah, I feel like this is well written, well made, well everything. Everything was really, really, really came together in a really good way. I enjoyed it a lot. I think we are in a good period of the show right now.
I think we talk a lot about, sometimes we get episodes that are a little wobbly, and we say, you know, there were a lot of really good ideas here, but a lot of things they attempted, they didn't quite pull off. Everything that this serial attempted to do, it executed perfectly. The effects that it did are all, you know, they all work. The storytelling, it all works. It's just a really solid serial. And had me just absolutely terrified in parts. Like, by the time we got to the third and the fourth episode, I just had, like, my arms wrapped around Joe and was like, oh my god, oh my god. Really, by the time it got to all the mind control stuff, because that's just one of my buttons. I don't have much else to say other than I agree. It's really good. It's probably one of my favorites for serials that we've seen so far.
Yeah, I said that about the last serial, and I'm saying it again now. Like, that's why I think we are in for a good string of serials. I hope. We'll see how it continues. So, Felicity, before we go, anything you want to plug?
Like I talked about at the top of the show, I am part of the Flopcast team. The Flopcast is a silly kind of pop culture geeky podcast on the ESO Network, hosted by Kevin and Cornflake. Oh, chickens are involved. We record in Chicken Town. I'm the mayor of Chicken Town, and we occasionally talk about chickens in the news, and that's something I can't really explain. It's a long story, but you'll find a lot of chicken talk on the Flopcast, as well as talk about movies, music, comic books, cartoons, and everything that geeks like.
And where can people find that?
They can find it at flopcast.net. Also, we're at facebook.com/flopcast and @flopcast on Twitter.
So go check them out. We only talk about chickens when it's fuzzy chicken nuggets. The Yeti.
The Yeti.
Oh, yeah,
favorite fuzzy chicken nuggets.
That is a good name for them.
If you like this episode, you can check out more on WatchYourAssLawn.com. And be sure to rate and comment on our iTunes. It really helps us out. Gets us, you know, up in the fancy iTunes charts.
Yeah, it helps other people find us on iTunes, which is amazing.
If you'd like to help us out even more, you can go to WatchYourAssLawn.com/support. And there you'll find a link to our Patreon page, which you can get to just by going to patreon.com/watchathon. And there you can donate a monthly amount to get all kinds of rewards, like day early episodes, uncut video of the podcast records, bonus episodes, and we do live streams. So Felicity joined us for when we watched Pyramids of Mars. So you could also join us in watching Doctor Who with us. Also on our support page is a link to our Amazon wish list, where you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing the corresponding serial on DVD for us. We'll mention you in the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You can follow him on Tumblr at mgoldentumbles.tumblr.com. That's Tumblr without an E, because it's Tumblr. You know what? Should we be, like, thanking Vince for doing our theme song every episode? Because I don't do that, but I've been listening to other podcasts and they thank their theme song person.
Yeah, you're absolutely supposed to credit your theme song person, and we just haven't been doing it.
Our bad. Hey, thanks Vincent EL for doing our theme song and retroactively pretend we said it every other episode that we've done so far. You can check him out at swinglish.nu or Twitter at Vincent EL, and he's on SoundCloud and he's everywhere. Vincent EL. Thanks for our theme song. Sorry, we've never said anything before.
Well, we did.
Well, in the episodes he's on.
Yes.
Yes.
Can I just say that your Twitter handle is kind of one of my favorite Twitter handles of all time. I smile every time I see it. Yes. I'm like, I see what they did there. It's clever.
100% sure that was your idea, Tony.
Yeah.
For those of you who don't know, our Twitter handle is @WatchYourRass. So.
That's in Rassilon, obviously.
Yeah, obviously. I don't know what else that can mean. But we'll be back next time for The Android Invasion.
Oh, I'm going to like that.
And thanks for hanging out with us, Felicity. It was fun.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I had a lot of fun watching with you and talking about it with you.
Well, we enjoyed doing that with you as well. But see you guys next time. Keep calm and wrestle on.
Goodbye, and I love you.
Goodbye.
Your evil is my good.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network. Your station for all things geek.